What is happening, PGA DFS fans? It is PGA Championship week here, and we've got your first look show here on the Osmo.com YouTube channel, and I'm joined by my best buddies, Max and Jeff, and going to talk about Jeff's massive KH Lee bomb last week, and also going to try and keep Max on the train here with us. He's on the double dose of the vaccination train, which we've all been through on this panel already. So, Max, we understand what you're going through here. But at least we got a great golf tournament to talk about. And before we get into that, I want to thank Monkey Knife Fight, our sponsor of the show. And last week, if you joined Bennett, Raza, and I, we highlighted the fact that the golf course we thought would play pretty easy. And the player props that they have over on Monkey Knife Fight gave us an opportunity to take advantage of that easy scoring last week. The line was set at 19 and a half birdies. So that's the type of contest you will get over at Monkey Knife Fight. And of course, we mentioned that both Daniel Berger and Jordan Spieth, we felt, were coming into a good week, and they were, and they got us on the over. So to check out the type of contest they're going to have this week for the PGA Championship, head on over to monkeyknifefight.com. And of course, with your first deposit using promo code Osmo, you're going to get a $100 match over there. So a great way to start building the bankroll. And when we start building the bankroll, Jeff, we get to do things like put money on a guy like KH Lee at 175-1. How about that? Talk to me a little bit about your week and what brought you over to KH Lee.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think the Byron Nelson was setting up as an event where, you know, it was wide open. It was going to be a birdie fest, like you said. Those events tend to just see crazy winners there, you know, especially with a little bit of weather involved. So I took a few shots on longer odds, guys. I mean, look, KH Lee was a dude who was making cuts despite putting horribly. Kind of caught my attention. He played well in a Weisskopf design at TPC Scottsdale. I was basically just going for the each way. I was happy with the top five. We got there, top 10, whatever. But, you know, when you have a guy like that hit, it's obviously, you know, you get that once a year, and it's awesome. So awesome. I think it might actually been my longest odd winner ever, but definitely close, if not the longest odd. So definitely a great week. And not, it's always nice to hit it before the major, because now I can just blow it all on, you know, the PGA Championship, because there's tons of crap going on.
What we're going to do here, though, is we're going to go over a little bit of a betting strategy preview here in a little bit, and we're going to make sure that that doesn't happen, Jeff. We're going to make sure we're going to continue to build that bankroll here this weekend. Just to finish on at Monkey Knife Fight, if you guys want to venture out outside of the PGA stuff, of course, they offer NBA, UFC, and soccer. And I know Max and I were talking a little UFC over the weekend on Twitter, if you caught it. But now we're going to talk about the 103rd PGA Championship. Max, 156 players, but we're going to write 20 off right away, right? It's not like they're priced at $2,000. They're priced at the min price of $6,000. You can't play the PGA professionals like Jason Roslin once was.
No, definitely not. And that's always nice with these tournaments where your player pool just decreases right away. So you can, you know, write off these guys and concentrate on the guys that actually can, you know, win, hopefully.
Hopefully, right? And Jeff, also to add on to that, top 70 golfers will make the weekend this week. So over, I would consider over half of the field going to end up making it. Maybe one of those PGA Tour professionals or PGA player professionals, I should say, make it. But that should maybe make 6 of 6 percentage, the highest we get at a major.
It could. It definitely could. It all depends how this course is going to play, right? If it just becomes, you know, where there's landmines out there, you could see some players just blow up, right? And the players are just able to grind around better. So I still think it's going to be a little bit variable, but, you know, we were talking a little bit, the weather looks okay. So you could be right here. I think, you know, the stats definitely say we're going to get fairly decent 6 of 6 percentage, but I'm still kind of preparing myself for carnage because I feel like this course is going to still play pretty tough.
Yeah, and it's a great segue. Of course, the two other notes that I had on off the top, Spieth looking for the career grand slam. You'll hear that a million times. And Rory, obviously, looking to go 2 of 2 here at Kiawah Island. And this is a great segue into talk about the course a little bit. And we were speaking a little bit before the show. During major weeks, the course gets a ton of coverage, always, whether it's Augusta, whether it's Kiawah, whether it'll be Torrey Pines in a month for the U.S. Open, or I don't know where they're in the rotation for the Open Championship this year. It's escaping me right now. However, you get to learn more about it. And Kiawah is a great course to learn more about. I'm really hoping that one of the 4 days we get an 8,000-yard print on the scorecard. I'm pretty sure there's the yardage for it. But the official yardage, right over 7,800 yards. However, guys, it's going to play firm and fast. So while, yes, one would think 7,800 yards, we got to put Bryson DeChambeau up at the top of our board right away. That's probably not going to be the case given the link style nature of the setup and the fact that they'll play firm and fast. So, Jeff, did you get that right away once you saw the first notes about the course?
Yeah, that it was going to just kind of play firm and fast and be tough. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think just looking at the course too, I mean, what we know about Pete Dye courses is that they generally, you know, every shot has trouble lurking. Like he's trying to put pressure on you for every shot. You know, he rewards good shots, he penalizes bad shots. And that kind of is what sticks out to me at Kiawah Island. Like every drive here, it's going to be described as like, oh, it's a link style course, it's open. It's really not, because every drive here is like, there's penalties, there's marshes, there's traps. Like if you drive it offline, you're not, your ball's just not rolling a little bit. It's probably, it might be dead. So I think that it's an open style Pete Dye design, which means that there's even more trouble than usual, in my opinion. So I think it is going to play fast. We've got sunny weather. I think that's the other thing. I know it's the Pest Pelham greens. Oh, they're so soft. It's going to make everything easy. I don't know about that. It's going to be sunny and a little wind, right? So I think that I think this course could play insanely tough if we had wind. Even without wind, I think that it's going to put a lot of pressure on guys. I think you won't see a ton of like bombing and gouging and stuff like that. And if you look at the leaderboard from 2012, you had a lot of guys up there who were averaging like 280 off the tee. So I know Rory won, but Rory's just good at was good at everything back then. So that's kind of my take on the course. It's long, it's firm, it's fast. It's going to put pressure on every shot. I go with the Supreme Ball Strikers this week.
Max, as I head over to you, it's called, of course, the Ocean Course for a reason. 10 of the holes are directly on the Atlantic, and the other 8 run parallel to it. So you can look at the Atlantic Ocean or go for a swim on any hole pretty much that you'd like to do. So that obviously means in literally a course that is on the ocean, you can walk to the beach. Wind will always be its primary defense, of course. And we saw that in the 2012 showing of this event. 13 under was the winner with Rory, but second place was only -5. So more of a U.S. Open setup in that regard. This year, the one difference, 3.5 inches on the rough. So it's about 1.5 inches longer than 2012. But do you think that the strength of field and the advancements in technology over the last 10 years will negate that 1.5 inch kind of difference that we're going to get?
Yeah, the problem is that the fairways are pretty wide. Exactly. So like if you go into the rough or into those penalty areas, that means you hit it really far offline. So yeah, I mean, definitely like takes away a Bryson for me, or even like the guys that are longer hitters, but they really don't rely on hitting it straight.
Yep.
And like you said, playing firm and fast, like you can take guys that are shorter hitters just as long as they find the fairway, right? Yep. The reason this isn't really like a normal link style course for me is that you can't really run it up on the green on a lot of these holes.
Oh, I saw that. No, it's a great point. Yeah.
Yeah. You still have to hit the ball in the air. So that's going to kind of take away these like awesome link style players like Jordan Spieth.
And if you are in the rough, it's going to be that much more penal. Exactly. Yeah, why you said you're not going to be able to stop it on these greens. Even first off, you're not going to be able to run it up to them. And second, you're not going to be able to stop it from 3.5 inches. So
yeah, exactly. So hitting the fairway for me is like the most important stat here.
We look at Erin Hills, and that was the other longest major that we've seen in the last, call it 3-4 years. And look at the leaderboard. We still saw someone in his name like Brian Harman, who legitimately could be one of the least driving distance heavy reliant persons on the PGA Tour. Abraham Answer, who's getting a lot of buzz here early this week, and rightfully so, is kind of taking that mantle a little bit, especially with his DraftKings price. So before we move on, a couple of other notes I wanted to bring up. First three holes, guys, might be the three easiest holes on the golf course outside of the other couple par fives on the course. So you got to get off to a quick start if you are starting on one for showdown purposes. Knowing that, Max, I know you dabble a little bit in showdown.
Yeah.
Would you target guys that are starting on 10 because, you know, you like your guys to get into the round before they come to the scoring holes, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how much like statistical, you know, analysis we can give on where, on which side you start. I'm assuming these guys would all come in with like knowledge of the course. They've already played it a couple times.
Yeah.
So it being a major week, I'm not really concerned about guys like starting off and not really knowing where the ball is going hopefully they already figured that part out.
Hopefully.
But yeah, 1, 2, and 3 are going to be your, you know, where you see guys going birdie, birdie, birdie. And, you know, if you are playing guys in showdown and they didn't do well in the first three holes, you can kind of start writing them off right away.
You can go to round two showdown contest exactly. At that point. Now, Jeff, on the other side of that, on the betting side, guys that get off to a fast start, we saw it, Rafa Cabrera-Bello at the Byron Nelson. Now, he ended up coming, I think he was actually came in second, Spieth and Spawn passed him. But is it something for first-round leaders you might want to target and say, hey, if XYZ gets off to a 2 or 3 under lead, this could be a good spot for him to post a number?
Yeah, I mean, the course does set up, obviously. The guys going off one have the, you know, you're dead on. I mean, the three easiest holes come on the first three holes, basically. There's one, like, scoreable par five. I think it's a 16th down the stretch. Yeah. But, like, every other hole around there are tough par fours, basically. So you can think about that. I mean, guys who are just quick starters. I mean, guys who come out hot, you know, get to 3 under or something and then just hold it. I don't know. I mean, everyone's kind of going to be playing the same course. So I look at, I just always tend to look more at conditions than anything here. But if you have a line on a guy who's just a quick starter, you think is going to come out ready, maybe has a nice tee time. Yeah, absolutely. It's something to think about because that is how the course is set up. It's very, you know, back heavy in terms of toughness.
Yeah, for sure. So last couple of notes on the course, added 300 yards from the 2012 showing. About 6 or 7 holes got that. One of the most noticeable ones, the shortest par four on the backside measured 410 yards in 2012. That cup moved up to 480 yards. There is no par four on the back nine that's under 440 yards. Goes to show you that this is going to be a fun Sunday back nine for sure. No doubt about it. Okay, let's talk about a little bit of GPP strategy here. Now, if you're a fan of the show, first of all, thank you, of course. And if you are coming to this for the first time, make sure you like and subscribe. We've got short-form videos coming out all of the time. Make sure you subscribe to do that. What are you going to do? Get notified, of course, when they do come live. I know Ben's going to be having some later on in the week. I've already got my values coming out this afternoon, which, believe it or not, Jeff, I actually also recommended Cage Lee last week. So you and I... definitely on the KH Lee train, no doubt about it. Now, what I want to do here is talk about a little bit of GPP strategy. One of the most questions I get this week of, say, new players coming in or wanting to join in on these bigger DFS prize pools is, how many golfers do I play if I'm playing 20 lineups? How many do I play if I'm playing 150 lineups? How many do I play? So what I've done is I've gone back and compiled some stats from some of our favorite DFS pros and just going to show you exactly how they build out their player pools. So first off, we always start off with our boss man, Alex Osmo-Baker. He's pretty much number one across the board. I think golf might be the only sport that he's not number one in. I think he's number three right now. So definitely a good guy to model after. And the average number of golfers he picks for an MME is 75. So this week, he'll probably be right around that number. He'll cover just about half of the playing field, as we'll call it, throwing out the PGA professionals. And he typically goes around 35% in the MME. Now, if you're playing 20 entries, he brings that down to 45 golfers and right around 33% for his top entries. So, Jeff, you and I have kind of gone over this stuff for almost a year. We've seen Alex do this, and we've seen that his success, he doesn't have a lot of downside doing something like this. Now, maybe, of course, the upside is a little bit capped, but we've seen him come up and win at least two events in the last year and a half in golf GPPs. So this seems to be the strategy that works out best in reducing variance and still giving you that upside.
Yeah, I think that first part is important. Reducing variance, definitely a little bit by doing this. You're still giving yourself a great chance. And I'm sure Alex has worked this out to where he feels very comfortable at this point, where he's reducing variance a little bit while still giving himself the best upside. Because, and I'm sure Alex is very concerned about wanting as much upside as possible. So yep. I don't think that you'd see him reduce it. He wouldn't be at this percentage if it was affecting his upside. Let's put it that way. So I think he feels very comfortable with this. Now, again, I've said it a couple times. I mean, I don't have a problem going a little bit heavier on higher allocations, but you got to be careful when you do it. I mean, you've got to be very confident. And, you know, if you did do higher allocations every week, it's going to bring way more variance into play.
You got to hit instead of needing just one or two hits throughout the year. You need to hit, say, one every 4 or 5 events because
sure.
The likelihood of you going bust, though, in that specific week is a lot higher. And Max, I know sometimes you get into the MME. Sometimes it's when you feel like you have a really good, you know, read on the field and you want to up your exposure to certain golfers. Totally understand that. So when you do you try and take advantage of, say, Jordan Spieth is the only good player in the field, so I'm going to get 80% of him and go MME? Yeah. Or is it to use more of the strategy that we just talked about with Alex?
Yeah, it depends on the field, like, for me, for sure. And depends on the event. Like, event like last week where the winner is really wide open, pretty much anybody can go low on a really easy course, I'm going to spread it out a lot more.
Yep.
But then on events like where the course is really tough and I can write off a bunch of people and somebody really fits the course super well, then I'm just going to take the variance and, you know, go almost all in on somebody. Sure. So, yeah, it really depends on the field and on the event for me. But, yeah, I mean, obviously, Alex has this worked out to a science. So I would not go against what he's saying at all.
For sure. Now let's look at a couple of more, and you're going to see most of these fall in line with what Alex does. We'll go over mine quick. I'm right around 65 to 70 golfers. My typical allocation on an MME is 35%, but I take a little different strategy in the 20 entry. I do limit my player pool. I'm right around 30, and my highest allocations, I typically go around 40 or 50%. Yeah. In those 20 entries, I think there's a little bit more opportunity, of course, to get leverage. And then just a couple of more pros that we'll talk about. We'll talk about Flavor Flav. He's kind of on the more aggressive side. He only goes for about 40 golfers. Still, though, his highest ownership allocation on average is 35 to 40%. Again, a little bit more aggressive on the 20 entries. And I think we'll go one more. We got Eric Lindquist next, our buddy, who is on the Wednesday show, of course, with Ben. He goes very in line with what Alex does. No surprise there. 75 golfers for MME, around 35% for the 20 entry, about 50 golfers and 40%. So kind of what we're seeing here, guys, is right around 70 golfers, right around 35% seems to be the magic number. However, what this really means is there's no right or wrong way to necessarily do it. Again, if you're picking all the entire field of 150 golfers, maybe that's where you see you're kind of more paying the rake than you are trying to still capture some of that variance on the upside. So, Jeff, 75 golfers, does that seem like a lot to you for an MME? Or do you think that given the fact that most of the guys that we've seen wound up in this place, that's the right number to be?
I mean, maybe, you know, for a slightly reduced field like we're getting this week, again, you can write players off. I would say it might be a little bit too big, but it's not, you know, I think that most of these guys have calculated it out. That's probably what their max range is. And again, they're trying to reduce variance a little bit. So no, I mean, I personally wouldn't go over that, but I think it's fine. And again, on a week like this, a major week, like Max said, you can maybe cut players down. Obviously we got the PGA pros in play. I think you probably cut it down a little week and still feel very comfortable.
For sure. And Max, as we move on here and get into some of our picks and whatnot, any other advice specifically for this week after seeing kind of what some of the pros do? If you had a question to you, say, hey, I want to make 150 lineups this week, how many golfers do you think somebody should have?
Yeah, I think this week you can kind of avoid the 6K range more than other weeks.
Totally
just
agree.
Because the guys in the 7 and the 8Ks can actually win. I have a very hard time envisioning a lot of these 6K guys winning. And I think like a lot of this also depends on your bankroll and how aggressive you want to get. So like if, you know, you're going week to week building your bankroll, I would get more exposure to the different players just to reduce variance. But if you're willing to be aggressive with your bankroll, then you can kind of cut down on the amount of guys you're going to play. So a lot of it depends on your personal risk tolerance as well.
Yeah, like it, just sure. To that point quickly, it's obviously got a Millie Maker in play. If you're taking one shot at a major max entering or something, this is a good week to do it. And, you know, using a slightly smaller player pool going to give you a little bit bigger shot at the upper prize. And I think the majors are more conducive to smaller player pools anyways. So yeah, good point there, bringing up the, you know, the whatever.
Yeah, the reduced variance. Now, okay. I know a lot of people we were seeing in the chat, people want to talk about the golfers in the event. And of course we are, but we want to set the stage because we need to also make sure that we're not just paying the rake and that we're recommending the right amount of people. So we're going to get into that now. But before we do, I want to tell you about the promo we've got going on over at Osmo.com. And it is a gold rush season, if you will. And that is our promo. All caps. Type in gold rush and you're going to get 25% off a month of Osmo Plus Platinum. Again, that's promo code gold rush. All caps. This offer is valid through 5/20. So stop guessing, start winning, and join Osmo Plus today. And of course, if you want to join us for the major just this week on the golf side, it's going to be just $8.95 for that weekly package. And let's talk about some of the golfers this week. And Rory McIlroy, obviously winning the event in 2012 and winning the Wells Fargo, kind of in different fashion, was not dominant off the tee, gets the lowest odds here this week. A quick jump back to the top of the board for Rory. He comes in at 11.5 as we go over our betting preview first. Then you got a batch at 14.5-1 of Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, and John Rahm, leaving Dustin Johnson kind of looking up at the pack at 18.5-1, his highest odds since the Northern Trust, Jeff. That had to surprise you a little bit. I know the form hasn't been good. Maybe it was the innocuous tweet that said he has a knee problem that did this.
I don't know. I think it was destined to have Dustin Johnson. I mean, he's played poorly for like over a month now too, right? So that was the other thing. I think if you had seen Dustin come in, and even if he had just been as like T25 last week, you know, he'd probably be up there with like Spieth and Bryson and Justin Thomas, kind of just in that group. But with the knee thing, with him not having played well for a bit, yeah, I think they kind of had to bump him down, because now you've got Spieth coming off a good week and all these other guys. I mean, I just don't think Dustin Johnson would have gotten books any bets. I don't think they would have had any handle on Dustin Johnson at that price. So kind of maybe setting the stage. If you like Dustin, I mean, you know, he's there now. He's very bettable, but you do got to wonder. I mean, this dude hasn't shown any sharpness now over a month. Now the knee thing, I'm not worried about the injury so necessarily, but I'm just more thinking like, does he just turn it on this impossible die course now?
Max, yeah, passing that over to you. We have seen some of these stars win at this 20-1 level this year. Justin Thomas, Rory McIlroy were both on those numbers in their most recent win. So do we take that trend, or do you think we saw something out of Rory we saw something out of Justin Thomas. We saw nothing out of Rory to suggest he would win at 20-1. So if you're in that camp, do you just blindly bet DJ here this week?
Yeah, it's tough with DJ. Like, the guy seems to be more into jumping off boats than he is into playing golf tournaments. Yeah, I don't know how much the knee thing had to do with it, other than like him just not wanting to play.
Yeah, and needing an excuse because it's 18. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, DJ at a major is always interesting, right? But for him right now, like, he's 70th in approach in this field in the last like 2 months. So, like, I don't know. When a guy's playing that bad with the irons, I just don't want to play them at die courses. Because at die courses, like, you need a really strong approach game. So he kind of just raises a red flag for me.
Sure does.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I'm on Dustin this week.
Yeah, I don't think so either for me. The other one that's kind of getting an early big bump with his odds going down is Victor Hovland coming in at 20-1. And that brings us kind of into our first clicks where, sure, if you want to build up top, I think it's an easy spot to go around and talk about that for a second. If I am building up top or I'm building a betting card, 14-1, actually, Jeff, is intriguing to me for starting points. I think this is the first major or first tournament, first major, I should say, that we haven't had a single digit to win winner pre-tournament. So I think automatically there's already built-in value in the odds if you have a good lean. For me, if I'm picking of these top guys, I would add Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth to the card before anybody else, given the fact that I think JT's tee to green game has been the best this year, and Spieth just seems primed to win a big-time event again.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, those are the two guys I would be bandying about as well. I kind of feel like, and then you mentioned this, like we seem to be getting just better odds. This, you know, there's no super like favorite that's single digits. A lot of these guys that we saw at the Masters, maybe 50-40-1, they've dropped in odds. And so I think we're just getting really good value on some names here. And I'm not really sure what the reason is. Maybe it's just a bigger field event. And this is what we're used to seeing. And the Masters just kind of playing with my mind, but I don't have a problem starting with Justin Thomas or Jordan Spieth. I'm probably going to be inclined to just, again, take advantage of these mid-tier guys because I feel like there's so many players with chances to win at 30 and over, but maybe or 20 and over. But those would be the two guys too. I'm inclined, you know, at the start of the week, I kind of said that like Jordan Spieth is really just headed in the right direction to win. I like the fact he played last week. We've seen winners of the PGA. I think the last five have all played the week before. Now there was a WGC the week before the PGA for a long time. So all the top players used to play the week before, but I still like it. You know, Brooks Koepka played the week before at the Byron Nelson when he won his last PGA. Spieth looked good. I mean, I think I'd take him over Justin Thomas. He's getting slightly better odds as well at most books right now. So that would probably be the way I leaned if you did dip into that 15-1 range. And I think it's fine to start cards there. I do. I'm not necessarily going to do it myself, but I think it's absolutely fine to take either Spieth or Thomas.
Max, I want to take Spieth and Thomas. If I also want to take Hovland and Morikawa, am I spreading myself too thin? Or given the fact that they're say 20-1 and 30-1, I'm still in okay shape as long as I, you know, go a little higher on my next ones.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with Jeff. Like there's so many bombish people that I really like this week that I don't know how much I'm going to start my cards with these like top guys. Spieth is probably my favorite. I guess I think we all agree on that. Just the way the guy's playing is on another level from pretty much everybody else. Like JT's probably the best tee to green, but his putter's been lost.
Totally lost. Yep.
Yeah. And maybe like going to a course with really slow greens will actually help him because he's been really bad on all these fast greens. So maybe that'll that'll be a change.
That was my first initial thought was give him slower greens because of expected conditions. And that's what's going to turn the corner on it.
Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully that's it because the guy's been unbelievable tee to green.
He should have won 5 times already this year. Easily.
Yeah. Easily. Easily. Yeah, but there's just like so many guys on like the 60 to even like 150 range that I really like.
Let's talk about a few of those. And one of the names that I had written down first, and I already mentioned him, was Abraham Ancer. Then I went to the books and his average was coming in at around 60-1. And Jeff, I saw Joaquin Niemann coming in at 80-1. And while I know Ancer puts the ball in the fairway, maybe a little bit more than Niemann, do we really think that it should be, you know, 20-1, you know, basically, you know, 30% lower. I don't see it. I want to click Neiman's name first.
Yeah, no, there's a couple players. Like I said, there's a group of players who you're getting significantly better odds on than from the Masters. You know, I'll just throw out a couple. I think Niemann is one. Casey, you know, you can get around, you know, bigger than 50-1 at a lot of places. Sungjae Im. But then you've got guys like Ancer and Sam Burns, who just their recent form was so good. They're coming off big events and their odds are actually worse than we saw at the first major. And I get it. It's a Pete Dye design. People want to, they're going to hit fairways. It's a great Ancer course. But like Abraham Ancer to grab his first win at a major for 40 or even 50-1. Dude, you're getting better odds elsewhere. Like, I mean, you can play him in DFS, but like outright, I'm sorry. Like you should be betting Casey. You should be betting even like Schwartzel, who's got just as good recent form, maybe Adam Scott. Like there's just better, you're getting better bang for your buck this week in other places. And like you said, Niemann as well. So I love Abraham Ancer. I don't think I can bet him at this number this week though.
I mean, it seems tough. Don't get me wrong. He's definitely trending in the right direction and could be due for a big time win, but we're still waiting for the first one to happen. So can't imagine it's going to be at Kiawah Island here with every good player. You got Thomas playing in great form, Rory coming off a win. I just can't imagine Ancer is going to step up and beat these guys when the getting gets tough. So again, I like him a lot this week. I think there's tremendous value on DFS when we get there, but the each ways, I would want to see those numbers come back a little bit to the Joaquin Niemann range of 80-1 before I start dabbling that much in Abraham Ancer. So looks like we're all on the same page. How about a couple of other first clicks? It's a Pete Dye golf course. It's on the coast of South Carolina. I mean, we should all be auto-clicking Siwoo Kim. Is that not right, Jeff?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, he looked great at the first major. He was up there in tee to green stats for like the first 2 or 3 days.
What happened? What you want to remind us what happened?
Well, I think he started missing putts and then he broke his putter and then it just went off the rails, right? But it's still a pretty good performance. He's had a good start to the year. And again, another guy like, he's almost double answering the odds. I mean, at this point, it's like Siwoo is so talented. And, you know, if he gets that all around the green game going here, we know he can get up and down from a possible spot. So, yeah, he's a good value out there. I mean, I'm seeing him at spots like 100-1. So, to me, that was like an auto click, especially if you can get access to like good each way odds, you know, top eight or something, top nine this week and on some offshore books, whatever. But even just like a top 10, I think Siwoo is fine. You know, he's just a good bet at that range. And another guy I'll throw out similar, a guy who's from this area of the world, is Harris English, played good last week.
Really good with the putter, yep.
Yeah, so, you know, you're getting triple digits on Harris English and Siwoo Kim. Again, two guys I'd rather take. You can take both those guys for the same amount of investment over Abraham Answer this week, and that's kind of the whole point of why I'm not really that big on Answer.
Such a great point. And Max, I would, in a card setting standpoint, I would rather have English and Siwoo Kim over Abraham Answer in terms of in each way or what have you. So lastly, on Siwoo Kim, looked pretty good for a couple of rounds last week, maybe didn't have it all together. Does that make you more intrigued that you saw good signs, or less intrigued that they weren't all there, say like they were for Jordan Spieth outside of the inside 5 feet putting?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote up Siwoo last week in our betting article. I just thought that he was primed to make a run there. Yeah, I mean, Pete Dye courses, Siwoo just owns them. And the guy's pretty much just like good at everything. So he can really come through any week. But I want to hear your guys' thoughts on my boy, the Hoff, Charlie Hoffman. The guy's been playing arguably the best golf of his career. And that's just like good at everything right now. Fourth tee to green, 16th in approach, ninth around the greens, and even putting well. And you can get him at like 150-1. This is a guy that's won before, so you're not like looking for a career, like a breakthrough for him. Obviously, it'll be his first major, but that's a guy that I really like. And it's a guy that handles pressure really well. We've seen him like come up at Masters and lead for a couple rounds. So that's a guy I'm looking for sure here.
Yeah, I think that's a great call on Charlie Hoffman. In fact, he was not only in the recent form portion of the data article that I write on Osmo, check out for free, of course, but he was top five in the statistical overview as well. Just tee through green kind of guy, not heavily reliant, of course, on driver distance. And again, not that we don't think it could be an asset here this week. For me, I don't want to speak for you guys. I certainly think it could, but I don't think it's going to be as much as a face value looking at a golf course saying 7,900 yards. We need to play Bryson in every lineup. It's just not the case here this week from the setup. So, all right. I think that's a pretty good first click in betting preview there. I think we've developed a pretty good card for me. I am starting off with the four stars up top. I just believe that in majors, they just come to play. Morikawa, Hovland, Spieth, and Thomas are my top guys, followed by Siwoo Kim and Neiman. Those would be my first six clicks on my board. So now let's talk about some DFS, as of course we have some of the biggest prize pools available to us. Of course, two millionaire makers out there. And of course, if you guys win one of those, we really want to hear about it. Make sure you tweet one of us up here on the panel right now, or anybody else, or our Osmo Hall of Fame Twitter account. And if you do that, what we're going to be able to do is you're going to tag any of our hosts and be sure to retweet us. And then you're going to be eligible to win a free month of Osmo Plus by using the avatar when placing in the top of a GPP. So do all that and you'll get some chances at some free stuff. Jeff, and this week we've got Rory McIlroy at 11,500. Automatically, that says to me, pricing is sharp. I don't even have to look at anybody else. Given the fact that it's a major and Rory's at 11.5, I don't have to go any further.
Fair enough. And I think the fact Justin Thomas is also over 11K is good. So I agree. I'm fine with the pricing as well. I mean, I think there's, you know, as you get into the 7K range, you know, and I think some people have already pointed them out, you know, you got some guys who've been in fire recent form that you can be like, oh, why is this guy so cheap? But it's also a major. It's a deeper field. So you're always going to have that. No, I like it. I mean, I think Rory, again, I think Rory is just like the de facto, it's like, well, we got to put someone at the top. Rory's won recently and he's the winner of Kiowa. He gets it because, you know, Rahm not playing that, hasn't done that much. Bryson hasn't done that much. Really Dustin hasn't done anything. And, you know, Justin Thomas played great, but hasn't won recently. So you know, we'll put Rory there and Justin Thomas has been like the best of the other ones. So that's kind of how we have the odds this week. It's going to be a really interesting buy low opportunities on guys like Rahm and Bryson, who I expect will be popular. Spieth probably popular too with the good recent form. So, I think you'll get lower ownership on those top three guys, not super low, but it'll probably be spread like most majors, but I'm expecting most of that ownership to flow down to Rahm, Bryson, Jordan, because significantly cheaper. And we know they're good players. They just haven't played as much as a guy like Rory.
Now, Max, Greg in our chat, our buddy Greg, says that you're going to win the Millie this week. Will Xander Schauffele, who's priced below Colin Morikawa and Jordan Spieth in a major or in an event for the first time in, I honestly can't even remember how long. So will Xander, because of that reason, be helping you win the Millie this week? Or are you out on Mr. Schauffele?
I like Xander, but I hate his price. I think he's going to be chalky. You guys tell me if I'm wrong, but like he's usually in the 10Ks and then he gets no ownership.
Yep.
But now in the 9Ks, I really think he's going to get ownership.
His first click is for sure from people that don't want to play a top end guy.
It's annoying. Yeah. It's annoying to me. I'm really hoping Hovland actually takes away a ton of ownership for him, because I feel like Hovland is going to be chalk here. Way too cheap, I feel like, on Hovland. Hovland with his form should be in like 10-1 in the Jordan range.
Yep. Yep.
So yeah, I think Hovland is probably going to be the chalk here. I like Xander for sure. I think the guy that no one is going to play, I mean, no one's going to play Brooks, and right. You shouldn't either.
And you should, right.
Yeah. But I think a lot of people are going to be off of Decky here. And I like the deck he played last week.
Looked pretty good.
Yeah, he played okay. Better than I expected, for sure.
Yep.
And at 9,400, I feel like a lot of people aren't going to click on him. But I think he's one of my favorites here in this range.
His major performance has been nothing to scoff at, even outside of that first place. Yeah. He's been very consistent in them. One of the only golfers kind of that has. Now, Jeff, two-part question here. Xander Schauffele and Victor Hovland. Do we get enough win equity? Not talking about ownership. Do we get enough win equity starting with those two guys?
No.
Good question. Yeah, I'm leaning towards no. I mean, I think so with Hovland. I don't think I can say the same thing about Schauffele. Hovland's so cheap too that I think you do. But then going to Schauffele, who, again, when you do start to factor in ownership, you've got probably the two chalkiest guys in that range. So I don't really like starting with those two.
Part of the question, it goes right to what you're saying. Is there a total ownership of those two guys that you'll say, I will play them because it's not high enough, or I won't play them if it's over this? And we're talking about combined ownership here.
Yeah, combined. I mean, I could definitely see them getting close to 40%.
Yeah, me too.
Maybe over even. I think Hovland's going to be really popular for good reason too, but just realize like you're eating the chalk there. And I think that's fine. I mean, we see the chalk fly at majors all the time. Not a big deal. You don't have to fade Victor Hovland, but then starting with a guy beside him like Schauffele, who is still going to be popular, doesn't bring as much win equity. That I don't really necessarily like that combo. So I think if I was going to go with one of these guys in this range, I would just eat it with Hovland. He'll be more owned, but I think he brings better win equity at a smaller price. But there's other dudes in this range. And, to Hideki's point, he's never missed the cut at the PGA. You got a guy like Patrick Reed down there who can just pop with the putter any week. I think those guys, probably bring a little bit better value there and will bring a lot lower ownership.
Yeah. And the great thing about a major, or the worst thing, it's certainly a double-edged sword by the way you go with it. Every good player is here playing this week. So if you think that, say, Patrick Reed is coming into form, or say Patrick Cantlay is bound for a bounce back, then you're going to have an opportunity to get those guys probably definitely under 10% on Cantlay and likely under 15% on Reed. You can roster both of those guys for the total ownership of Victor Hovland. But Max, can you stomach Patrick Cantlay again this week?
No, he's broken.
He's Don't totally broken. You're done.
No, I mean, I have to see something. I just haven't seen anything. Obviously, the guy's all the talent in the world, but something happened. I don't know, the girlfriend or not the girlfriend, who knows? But it's like 9K. I'll just play like Cam Smith or something at 8,900.
Jeff, you and I loved him at this golf course at the beginning of the season. It's So crazy how things work. Did he have to die for Jordan Spieth to come back to life?
Yeah, maybe, dude. I mean, that's like,
what's going on here?
It kind of feels like that, you know. Did you do something? Here,
maybe I can only have one of my guys be good. I don't know.
I will make a small argument for Patrick Cantlay this week. The last two times he's played, he's basically missed the cut on the number. It's not like he's been like so bad. He hasn't been Matthew Wolf, where he literally can't drive the ball anymore. It's just been he's lost strokes putting. The irons like got a little bit loose down the stretch of the cut. And especially at the Wells Fargo, like he was there and then he just, you know, made like a couple of bogeys. It's like, oh, missing the weekend again. He's gained strokes off the tee the last two times out. I'm not writing off Patrick Cantlay, even though I probably should. Like, it's a little ridiculous, but I just know the guy is talented and I do like this setup for him. Like, I really do. So I haven't written him off completely yet. I think he will be about 5% owned. Maybe, he might come in at like 3% owned.
Well, with that, wouldn't you be silly if you were Max entering not to play this guy?
Oh, absolutely, dude. You know, like I said, go 5%. You might be double the field. So, he definitely would be on my list if I was max entering. Again, I'd want – you don't have to go crazy. You know, 100 lineups, maybe – I don't even know if you have to play 10. 8, you're probably double the field. So, I would get some exposure to him there for sure. I think he's a great max entering target. But as far as best plays in this range, yeah, I'm not going to stand for him that hard or anything. Cam Smith, like Max said, far more consistent, much more likely – just a way better floor at this point. So I'm not ready to write Cantlay off, but I recognize, you know, like it's still a big ask for a guy just to get the sharpness back. But like I said, he hasn't been that bad. So just keep an open mind.
I agree, Max. I'm in Jeff's camp here, but I'm used to playing terrible golfers when they're out of form, or golfers when they're out of form. Let's just put it that way. Now that brings me to say, you don't think this is Jordan Spieth level decline, though, do you? Or do you,
no,
Max?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
We just have to, like, Jordan was bad for how long? Like 2 years? Yeah.
This is like 2 months.
This is 4 tournaments. Yeah. And before that, he had gotten like a second and a third.
Yeah, it was. He had a good year this year. Yeah. I mean, he had I think he even had the course record at Pebble or close to it, tied the course record, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the putter is not good.
Why did he switch?
I don't know. Terrible. I think the more he misses putts, it really wears on the guy.
I agree.
Like, you can see it in his. I've been playing him way too much, by the way. You guys have to like have an intervention with me because I played him 3 out of those 4 missed cuts. The putter is not good, and the approach game is not good. Off the tee is fine, like Jeff said. So until I see some signs, I just don't think the PGA Championship is going to be where he just like pops all of a sudden.
I agree.
So I will see. Maybe I definitely wouldn't write him off in 150 max. Like Jeff said, just go like 5%.
Yep.
So that's my take on
well, this. And here's the other thing. And as our buddy Scott Stewie in our chat mentioned, he's just not right in the head right now. And he's not. Yeah. And you need, even if his game is crisp again, you need to be in the right mental status or mental headspace to win a major. There is no doubt about it because it's going to get tough. So there are a couple of other golfers, though, in this range that are playing good. One guy led the field in strokes gained on the approach last week, and he almost had a hole-in-one and stuff, so it's a little skewed. Maybe I'm trying to talk myself out of playing Will Zalatoris. But then my perennial fade of Daniel Berger's also right there. So both of these guys look like they're probably going to be clicked a decent amount. And should be. So, Jeff, can we play both? And if we can't play both because of ownership, who's the one you are playing?
If I'm playing one, it's going to be Berger. I love this setup for Daniel Berger. I really do. To, yeah. It's a tighter P die setup. This is just where Daniel Berger excels. And if you ask me, I think it's because of just where he was brought up in Florida, playing, you know, tight designs like PGA National. It just seems like he has a better short game around these courses. His irons were fire in the last round at the Byron Nelson. He's been really consistent off the tee basically for like a year and a half now. So I don't think he's going to have trouble off the tee here. He likes these kind of setups, man. I love this spot for Daniel Berger. Hit him at 45-1 last night before it dropped. He's now in like the 28 to 30 range.
Oh, that's great.
I'm very excited about that. So Look, I mean, it all depends how your week goes. Maybe you just pile on the Daniel Berger betting and fade him in DFS. But like, I'm playing Daniel Berger at this price. I think it's a great spot for him. We've seen him challenge in majors before. I think he's just the type of player who, yeah, I wish Cantlay was playing this good, because he's the type of player like Cantlay who, if he was coming in good form, I think it's a great spot for him to grab a major. But if you ask me who the two I'd play, it would be Berger over Zalatoris.
All right, Max, I'm not going to try and talk you off of Berger, but I'm going to tell you that we don't have a top 10 in a major in the last seven. We'd have to go all the way back to Shinnecock Hills at the U.S. Open to get that. We had a miscut at the Masters. We had a 34th before that, 13th before that. I mean, now you transition into easy events. Now, I'm not trying to go against totally what you say, Jeff, here, but AT&T Pebble Beach turned out to be a pretty easy event this year. He wins it. Last week, one of the easiest events of the year, tied for second, tied for third. A couple of other ones that I'd say were low scoring, RBC Heritage, that ended up being pretty low scoring, top 10 there. So is this guy a glorified Webb Simpson, or maybe a better Webb Simpson in the coming years? Or can we trust him in a major, Max? What are you doing with him this week?
Yeah, I mean, Berger's probably never played this good, though.
That's a great point. Yeah, he's definitely in the best form of his career, it seems.
Yeah, so maybe he breaks through. But, like, my note on Will Zalatoris is play him at hard events and really windy courses. He's one of the best in hard events and in wind. So if the wind does pick up, if this plays hard, Willie Z is going to be there. His putter has definitely not been as hot as you'd like it to be coming into the event. But that's pretty much it. Everything else, he does well, hits it far. The approach game is on fire, like you guys mentioned. I think I'm going to go against Jeff here, and I think we think it's going to play hard. So for me, I would take Will Z over Berger.
Yeah, it's a tough lean for me. I am at this point, and don't jump on me too much, chat. At this point, I'm fading both of them. I'm just going to go down. I'm going to skip them and go down and get Abraham Answer. Eat the chalk at 7,900 there, and even eat the chalk at 7,800 as we get into a couple of our more value plays. And we got about 7 minutes left, so plenty of time to still get in some of our value plays and bombs. But before we do, want to let you guys know, if you are traveling for work or, say, flying to Disney World, since, of course, that has upped its capacity and everybody's not letting masks anymore and you want to travel, well, you can download our podcast network and, of course, listen to us on the go, all of your favorite providers. And when you go into one of our podcasts, of course, make sure you leave a 5-star review and you'll be eligible to win some Osmo Plus stuff. I think there's every week we give away a weekly pass. Sometimes we give away a monthly one. And of course, reviews are eligible for up to a year. So definitely take a look at that and get into the more value section. I already mentioned Answer. I already mentioned Neiman. But another guy that I want to talk to you guys about is one that has made the cut in each of the last seven majors. $7,400. And certainly playing some of his best golf that I can remember. It's Matt Wallace. I think one of the best values on the board. So who would like to talk about Matt Wallace first? I'm going to say it looks like Jeff does here. So go ahead and speak about him and maybe any other values in that range.
I honestly don't have much to say about Matt Wallace. He's a good player. He's completely changed his approach. It's really consistent. It's working for him. It's a good play here. I think Max brought up a great point with Charlie Hoffman, though. I think if you're pivoting, that's where I would go. But, the only thing I can say about Wallace is he's going to be popular. I tend to fade more the popular guys in the 7K ranges here because there's just far closer options. So for me, he might end up being a fade this week, but like, I don't have anything bad to say. His tee to green game is ridiculously good at this point. Yep. Deserves to be, a popular play at this price.
Max, a couple of other, I see chat talking about him. If we're talking about guys that liked island golf courses in South Carolina that happened to be designed by Peter Dye, definitely would fit in this value range. 6,900 Stuart Sink. Talk about the best year of his career. This has got to be it. Now, listen, I know he won the Open Championship, so he's a major winner. Pretty decorated golfer in and of himself. But he's having a breakout year right now.
Yeah, Stewie Sink is like hitting it with the 30-year-olds.
he's crushing it.
One of the best drivers of the golf ball that we have. It's amazing. That's I love to see it. Fellow bald guys, I'm all in on them. I love Stewie Sink. I think somebody brought up Schwartzel already, but this guy is back. I really love his game.
The ugliest putter ever known to mankind. But
he's still using that thing.
He's still using it, and he's putting okay with it.
like the backwards, like just, I don't even know what you call
backward
it.
Backward mallet. So, yeah, it's the backward mallet.
Backwards mallet. There you go.
How many putters would you have to go through before you pick that one?
A million. I would never settle on it. I'd go for the arm lock Matt Kuchar Willie Z before I got to that, for sure.
Yeah, no, it's bad. I love Schwartzel. I love, like we mentioned, but like some of the guys we haven't talked up in the 7K range here, I think Keegan's going to be popular, right?
Yeah.
The guy just hits every fairway and hits it far. So I actually like that chalk more than I like the, you know, the Matty Wallace chalk. Just because Matty Wallace tends to
blow
get
up
in his head a little bit.
Yeah.
Keegan was T4 here too in 2012. So
yeah. And a PGA champ winner himself.
Stop on that. Not a bad
thing. Keegan is like hitting 20 footers. What's up with that? You know,
if this guy hits 20 footers, he's going to be a perennial top 10 candidate in pretty much any event he tees it up, because that's the only thing that's been bad for him. But he's played much better recently. I think those are all really good calls. A couple of other questions. As we go up the board a little bit more, I saw chat talk about Louis Oosthuizen. He's in at 8,000. Perennial bridesmaid in majors. Of course, he does have a win himself, so he's not just a bridesmaid. But he does have a second in all four majors. Kind of cool. Would you rather play him over Ty Hatton? I am of the opinion that is an absolute yes. Ty Hatton is a no for me in majors until I see him come in the top 10. The performance at the Masters was better, Max. So are you inclined to buy him over Louis or skipping out on this range entirely? Tommy Fleetwood. Right.
So
there.
So Ty Hatton didn't play well at the Masters until he was out of contention. So I think
that's a great point. Yeah.
Yeah. So once he was out of contention, like he kind of stopped thinking and just started playing. But like you said, at majors for me, Ty Hatton is a no. 8K is good for DFS. Like
not bad.
Yeah. I think it's a fine play. But I would play Louis, and I'll play Shane Lowry over him actually at 7,800.
I like Shane Lowry. It's a great call.
Yeah, Jeff. Shane Lowry here is, especially if the wind picks up and it plays hard, I really like that play.
Kind of under the radar, Jeff. We talk about Shane Lowry a decent bit in our shows. He's another guy that's made the cut in all seven majors in the last seven, including that win at the Open Championship. So his major form has certainly gotten better from when he was. So 7,800. I think it's a great pivot. Are you on board with Max and I?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Hatton also coming off a COVID withdrawal. So, I mean,
great point, yeah.
Look, we saw Dustin basically win a major off that, off a similar thing. But, I mean, I don't know.
Spieth last week almost win too. So, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's not like that big a deal. But, yeah, I'm not super big on Ty Hatton. I do think this is kind of an interesting setup for him. But, yeah, we'll see. Maybe we'll get some better news on him or something. I don't know. But I'm certainly going to play Louis over him because I play Louis every week anyways. But I like the Lowry call. He's top 10 at the last two PDI courses we've seen too, Heritage and the Players. So just a good, you know, a good little run here. Playing good tee to green, like you said, upped his, he's just a good major championship golfer. Him and Oosthuizen are very similar. You know, Oosty's never missed a PGA championship cut.
Well,
knock on wood. But both those guys, I mean, you should be targeting them, man. I mean, tough golf courses, guys that play well in wind. Both of those dudes absolutely should be on the radar this week.
Now we got just about 60 seconds left. The NHL Strategy Show coming up right after us. And of course, our live coverage, PGA Championship, that'll kick off, or continue, I should say, tomorrow, 1 o'clock. Ben Raz and I are going to be on the PGA DFS Strategy Show. And of course, Alex, the boss man, Baker, will be on the Wednesday show with Eric and Ben. And who knows, maybe I'll even pop around and chat, maybe even pop my face in the show. Who knows? We will see what we can do. But before we go on, we're going to give you a couple more values. We have mentioned quite a bit in this range, but I want to talk about Sam Burns and Bubba Watson, both at 7,500. I love those golfers here this week. And as we go a little bit lower, we've mentioned Schwartzel, we've mentioned Stuart Sink, but I'd like one player from each of you under 7K. We've got 30 seconds each. So Jeff, I'll give it to you first.
Yeah, Bubba is super interesting. I admit, I'll probably talk myself into some Bubba, playing good tee to green. Played well here. He's played well, Whistling Straits, another die design, kind of coastal course. So, you know, take that info what you may, but I think Bubba's a really good pivot off of Wallace this week. My guy under 7K, who's going to be just like nothing owned, is going to be Thomas Peters. Missed the cut last week. He was hitting it fine. He just didn't make any putts. Thomas Peters shows up in majors. You look at his career record, he shows up in majors. I like it at 6,800. Everyone will play Schwartzel. Schwartzel's fine.
Yeah.
I think Peters is a really good, like 1% pivot, though.
Max, like those calls. So we got a guy under 7,000. And if you like Burns or Watson.
Yeah, I love Burns and Watson. I mean, I played Burns last week. I knew he coming off a win, he'd be nothing owned.
Yep.
Almost won again. The guy's playing awesome golf. My guy under 7K is Alex Noren. Yeah, playing really good golf. And I feel like this kind of setup actually plays well for a guy that hits a bunch of fairways, really good with his long irons. So I'm expecting him to do well.
Alex Noren, Thomas Peters, Charles Schwartzel, Stuart Sink, some golfers under 7,000 here for you this week. Of course, if you go out throughout the show, we've got plenty in the 8,000 to 7,000 range. So until tomorrow with Ben and I in the PGA DFS Strategy Show, of course, make sure you like and subscribe to our channel to get notified when we come live and when our videos also come on air. So until next time, everybody, good luck at the PGA Championship. And we'll see you next week for the stretch golf that includes the U.S. Open. Cheers, everybody.